Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. We open our show with two aviation-related stories today. A fatal plane crash in Santee has added fuel to concerns raised by neighbors of Gillespie Field over increased flight school air traffic over their homes. In other news, the federal government has filed charges against six Chaldean Iraqi-American soccer players from El Cajon for allegedly disrupting a Southwest Airlines flight, but advocates for the players say they were victims of racial profiling. The state of California has settled litigation over solitary confinement of prisoners, and we'll have details on what that means for inmates at state prisons. A new report has alarming details about rising poverty among elderly people in California and what can be done to help lift seniors out of poverty. The Sweetwater Little League team has returned home from the Little League World Series, greeted by fans and family. Our sports reporter Liz Alper was at the scene, and she's got interviews with the team's coach and star players. Today on Destination East County, hear about some festive events coming up across East County, from powwows to a grape stomp festa and a deep pit barbecue, and much more. Hear our interviews with the leaders of Visionary Dance Theater, an amazing organization helping disadvantaged youths get training in dance and musical theater, mentoring students all the way to Broadway. Plus, hear about their upcoming production of the 60s musical Hairspray. On Green Scene, learn about conservation funds allocated to preserve lands in East County. We'll have details today on memorials planned, including a trail ride to honor the memory of famed Descanso saddlemaker Gary McClintock, also an expert on vaqueros. So today, we'll replay our Sounds of History interview with Gary McClintock on the history of vaqueros in our region. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. An airplane owned by a flight school at Gillespie Field crashed into a Santee neighborhood Thursday morning, damaging two cars and a home. The pilot died on impact, and a passenger later died in a hospital of critical injuries. The plane, a Piper PA-28 Cherokee, is currently registered to the Volar Corporation Flight School at Gillespie Field in El Cajon, according to the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA. The same plane made an emergency landing on State Route 52 back in 2013, directly in front of our own reporter, Paul Cruz, who captured that magic moment on camera. Back then, the plane was registered by Golden State Flying Club, another local flight school in El Cajon. Advocates for Safe Airport Policies, or ASAP, has long voiced concerns over the increased flight school traffic over homes near the airport. ASAP leader Sue Strom shared her reactions with East County Magazine. She said, "We are saddened to hear about the loss of life. Unfortunately, with 140 to 180 training flights over our homes every single day, it's a matter of when this would happen, not if it would happen. We call upon our elected officials to end this insanity. Gillespie Field should curtail student flight training over dense residential areas," Strom concludes. Her group is currently contemplating a lawsuit against the county over the problems the flight schools are posing for residents. Now, we contacted Supervisor Diane Jacob, who issued this statement. "The crash is a tragic incident, and my heart goes out to the families of the two individuals that were on the plane. It would be premature to speculate on what happened, but I will be closely monitoring the details when they are available," the supervisor adds. SanteePatch.com reports that one witness says the plane made a sputtering sound before it crashed. Tommy McCormack, a student who was homesick from school, heard the crash. He said, "I was sleeping this morning, and I woke up from a large explosion. When I walked outside, I heard people screaming fire. I looked to my right, and two houses away was a plane. It was upside down, and in the front of the plane was a fire," he told 10 News. Now, this is far from the first crash in that area. At least one plane has previously crash-landed into a driveway of another home near Gillespie Field, as we previously reported. Others have made emergency landings, and yet another dropped a tire through the roof of a Santee condominium at a complex where one of our own reporters used to live. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Six soccer players from El Cajon face federal charges of disrupting a Southwest airline flight from San Diego to Chicago. The flight was diverted and landed in Texas after a confrontation between crew members and the passengers. If convicted of interfering with an airline flight, the young people could face up to 20 years in prison. The federal complaint alleges that the young athletes, all in their late teens or early 20s, used profanity, lunged at a flight attendant, and called her racist and a pig. But family and friends of those arrested say the dispute arose after flight attendants demanded that the players, all Iraqi Chaldean Christians from El Cajon, stop talking in their native language. Mark Arabo, a national spokesperson for Chaldean Americans, says that the airline's demand that passengers speak only in English is intolerant and illegal. In a press release, Arabo says he helped negotiate release of the men for now, though they are still facing charges. He says these young men made some regrettable actions, but adds, there is fault on both sides. We intend to wholeheartedly stand behind these young men moving forward. A flight attendant has said she feared for the safety of the crew and passengers when the players refused to obey instructions. Tamara Petras, whose brother was arrested, says this was just a group of Middle Eastern boys speaking our language, having fun on a plane, going on their first vacation together for a soccer tournament. In an interview with NBC7 TV, Petras says she believed cutting the flight short was an overreaction. The family suggests the airline engaged in racial profiling, with the flight attendant shouting, "Shut up," repeatedly at the soccer players. But Mohammed Shamsaldia, another soccer player in the league, says his colleagues should have shown respect for their elders. Those arrested are Simon Hermes, 19, Jonathan Khalid Petras, 20, Ghazwan Asad Shaba, 21, Essa Solaka, 20, Khalid Johanna, 19, and Wissam Imad Shaker, 23. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
Thousands of inmates are set to be released from solitary confinement in California prisons after settlement of a legal case reached between the state and prisoners held in isolation for a decade or more at Pelican Bay State Prison. Prisoners there spend up to 23 hours a day confined in windowless cells with no access to mail, the law library, or other services. A United Nations official has called the confinement cruel and unusual punishment akin to torture. The state is considering applying the settlement terms to other prisons in addition to the prison included in this case, heard in federal court. Until recently, California had the highest rate of prisoners in solitary confinement in the nation. Texas now tops the list. Under the settlement, the state will put inmates considered dangerous into small, high-security units where the prisons will be able to access education and rehabilitation programs, as well as receive calls and visitors. Prisoner advocates who challenged California's reliance on solitary confinement contended that the high number of prisoners in isolation failed to improve prison security. In response to complaints, the state has already moved about 1,100 prisoners out of solitary and into the general prison population over the last 2 years, without significant problems, the Los Angeles Times reports. Many of those in solitary confinement are there due to suspected prison gang associations. Now, those who have not violated a major prison rule in the last 2 years will move back to the general prison population. Jules Lobel, an attorney with the Center for Constitutional Rights who represented prisoners in the case, has hailed the settlement as a dramatic step forward. But the State Prison Guards Union has voiced fears that the releases could jeopardize the safety of prison guards as well as other inmates. The settlement is expected to impact 1,800 of the 6,400 inmates in solitary confinement. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Tasha Matthews.
Nearly 1 in 5 adults over age 65 in California, more than 750,000 people, live in an economic no-man's land, unable to afford basic needs but often ineligible for government assistance, according to a new study by the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research. The study, funded by the California Wellness Foundation, highlights the plight of the hidden poor, those who live in the gap between the federal poverty level and the Elder Index's poverty measure. That's considered a more accurate estimate of what it takes to have a decent standard of living. The Elder Index accounts for geographic differences in costs of housing, medical care, food, and transportation. The National Federal Poverty Level Guidelines say that a single elderly adult living alone should be able to live on $10,890 a year, while the Elder Index estimates that people in California on average require over $23,000 a year. Dr. Imelda Padilla-Frausto, a UCLA graduate student researcher at the center and lead author of the study, says many of our older adults are forced to choose between eating, taking their medications, or paying rent. The state might be emerging from a recession, but for many of our elder households, the downturn seems permanent, she says. According to the study, about 772,000 elderly adults in California who are heads of households belong to this group of hidden poor, which is more than double the number of elderly who meet federal poverty level guidelines. Unlike the official poor, the hidden poor often do not qualify for public assistance. The study shows that whites make up over half of elders in the financially pinched group, but proportionally, grandparents raising grandkids, older adults who rent, Latinos, women, and the oldest Californians, those 75 years and older, were the groups most affected. Geographically, the researchers found that in all counties, between 30 and 40% of elderly adults who are single and 20 to 30% of older couples are among the hidden poor. Another group with a high proportion of hidden poor are single elders in rural areas. Among older couples, Imperial County had a significantly higher rate than any other county. 43.4% of older couples there did not have enough income to make ends meet. And yet, according to federal poverty guidelines, less than 12% of older couples in Imperial County were considered poor. The authors have recommended ways to address the needs of those living in the gap between the federal poverty level and the Elder Index. Those ideas include increasing and protecting income, as proposed in Assembly Bill 474 and the Supplemental Security Income Restoration Act. Another idea is to raise income eligibility limits for housing assistance and use former redevelopment funds to construct affordable housing. Also helping seniors with the cost of health care by raising income eligibility to 200% of the federal poverty level, up from 100%, as well as expanding and updating food benefits. Judy Belk, president and CEO of the California Wellness Foundation that funded the study, concludes, "It's very clear that income level is a major predictor of health outcomes at any age. This research underscores that elders' economic security is a health equity issue." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Ed Barena.
And this is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting this week's Destination East County. This week, we've got a grape stomp, a powwow, an art show, and a deep pit barbecue.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including a production of the hit show Hairspray, Santee's Bluegrass Festival, a dinner theater show, and, as the season turns to Indian summer, yet another powwow. So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more.
The 45th annual Barona Powwow will be held at the Barona Reservation Sports Park in Lakeside from Friday, September 4th through Sunday, September 6th. A grand procession will take place at 7 o'clock on Friday and Saturday evenings, featuring representatives of all tribes participating. There will be competitions all weekend long, as well as craft and vendor booths. For more information, you can visit barona-nsn.gov.
Fall is harvest time at East County Wineries, and on September 5th, the Julian Grape Stomp Festa will be held at Mangini Winery from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. There will be tons of grapes to stomp, plus wine tasting from local wineries, food and craft vendors, and more. For tickets and details, visit julianca.com.
Talented artists from Julian and nearby communities will present their paintings, photography, mosaics, ceramics, printmaking, jewelry, and other works of fine art at the Fall Art Show in Julian on September 5th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Admission to the show is free, and many of the artists will be available to discuss their works. For more information, go to julianca.com.
The 78th annual Deep Pit Barbecue in Descanso will be held on Sunday, September 6th, hosted by Our Lady of Light Parish Church. The preparation starts the night before with the slow cooking of seasoned beef using two cords of oak firewood. The barbecue and festival takes place starting at 11 a.m. on Sunday, also including crafts, games, and vendor booths, as well as prize drawings. For all the juicy details, you can visit churchbarbecue.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. Visionary Community Theater and Visionary Youth Theater of East San Diego present Hairspray at the Performing Arts Center at Point Loma High School on September 10th through 12th and 17th through 19th. Enjoy as the diverse and talented Visionary cast and crew welcome you to the 1960s. The 50s are out and change is in the air. Baltimore's Tracy Turnblad, a big girl with big hair and an even bigger heart, has only one passion, to dance. She wins a spot on a local TV dance program and overnight is transformed from outsider to irrepressible teen celebrity. But can a trendsetter in dance and fashion vanquish the program's reigning princess, win the heart of heartthrob Link Larkin, and integrate a television show without denting her due? For tickets, visit visionarycommunitytheater.com.
Off-Broadway Live in Santee will present One Hit Wonder, a dinner theater production about a group that sang other people's songs until they had their own hit. Just one hit, that is. This story brings to life the music of Neil Diamond, Kenny Rogers, Eddie Rabbit, Dionne Warwick, Roberta Flack, Olivia Newton-John, the Eagles, and so many others. The event includes a fully catered dinner and beverages. The live combo plays great dinner music, then Bob and Steve, with musical guests, singing the songs of the best singers and songwriters of all time. Off-Broadway Live is on Cuyamaca Street in Santee. For more info, go to offbroadwaylive.com.
The Sequan Band of the Kumeyaay Nation will host its 26th annual powwow on September 11th through 13th at the tribe's powwow grounds, which are behind the casino on the Sequan Reservation in El Cajon. Dancers from across the nation will compete for $125,000 in prize money at the powwow, which also features bird singing and, for Native American children, peon games. Crafts, food, and vendors will be on hand at the powwow, which is free and open to the public. For details, see the Sequan Powwow page on Facebook.
The twang of banjos and fiddles will again fill the air, while delicious food and beverages fill the appetites at the 6th Annual Santee Bluegrass Festival on September 12th from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. This one-night festival is a fundraiser that benefits local teen programs, park improvement projects, and the city's recreation scholarship program that subsidizes fees for less fortunate children, families, and seniors. The event takes place at Town Center Community Park East. This year's lineup features two talented bluegrass bands, Box Canyon and High Mountain Road. Admission includes wine and beer sampling plus tastes of food prepared by local restaurants. This event usually sells out quickly, so organizers advise music lovers not to fiddle around. Tickets are available at the City of Santee's website or at Santee City Hall. That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more fantastic festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The Sweetwater Valley Little Leaguers returned home Monday night and were honored by family, friends, and fans Tuesday night at the Sweetwater Valley Little League Complex. The boys made it to the U.S. semifinals before losing in a rematch to Texas 9-7. The ceremony was complete with Chula Vista Mayor Mary Salas, San Diego County Supervisor Greg Kotz, Joe Little of 10 News, and of course the boys themselves, who were flattered by the support. Even though they're home and about to go back to school, the boys aren't done achieving their dreams yet. All of them are ready to take another shot at a Little League World Series championship, and some are dreaming even bigger than that. Reporting live for KNSJ, this is Elizabeth Alpern. Hi, this is Liz Alper with East County Magazine. I'm here with Sweetwater Valley Little League coach. He coached the West in the Little League World Series, Arturo Maldonado. Arturo, wow, what a run. How proud are you of these boys?
Couldn't be prouder. You know, as a coach, I mean, the boys bought in from day one of what our plans were and where we wanted to reach and our goals, and they lived up to it and then some.
Yeah. So going into that Thursday night game, huge game against Texas, rematch against Texas, what was the mindset?
The mindset was to go in there and not create the errors and beat ourselves. And I think we played a very solid game. We didn't beat ourselves, you know, and we went out there and played our game, and they came up on top, and we tipped our hats off to them, and that's just the way baseball is from one day to the next.
I know there's a rematch. Were you seeking, like, any form of revenge or redemption at all? Was that the feeling?
Yeah, because we're not used to losing. We went, 19-2, and we want to play every game and give ourselves the best shot. And that's what we did, and that was our mindset, to go out there and put our best foot forward and go out there and play Sweetwater Valley baseball.
So you said from day one the boys took this seriously. Even when the championship wasn't on the line, they took it seriously?
They always took it seriously. It was something, you know, these boys, they're 12 and 13 years old. They're goofballs, they're 12-year-olds. You know, but as soon as they stepped on the field, it was within themselves as a team. they knew it was all business, and that's how they carried themselves this whole summer.
Did they feel any pressure at all? I know all the games were nationally televised, ESPN, huge, right? Millions of viewers across the country. What was the pressure like on them?
They were relaxed, you know, I mean, was there pressure among every single player, every single coach? Absolutely. I mean, we always put ourselves to the test every game to go out there and perform at the highest level possible, and that does create a little bit of pressure.
So, after that Thursday night game, just a heartbreaker, what was the feeling, general feeling?
The boys were sad, you know, you could tell in their faces. Like I said earlier, we're not used to losing, but you know what? The greatest thing about coaching youth sports is within a couple hours, you feed them some pizza, you give them some soda pop, and they're back to being 12-year-old boys, 13-year-old boys, having the time of their lives in what very few people get to experience, you know, being at the Little League World Series.
Yeah, and I'm sure they'll remember this for the rest of their lives. Thank you so much, Coach.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you for coming out here and supporting us.
Nope. Hi guys, I'm with West superstar Antonio Andrade. Antonio, you're 13 years old, hitting those monster home runs. You hit some pivotal home runs in the series, especially in the rematch against Texas. How did that feel, just hitting all those home runs?
Well, it felt really great, you know, feeling that you hitting it over a fence, that you know you did a really good job. It felt really amazing when you hit it over a fence.
Knowing a big hitter like you, going into that rematch against Texas, that must have carried a huge feeling of revenge, am I right?
Yeah, you know, because Texas already beat us once, we weren't going to go down and let them beat us again. We weren't going to go down without a fight.
What was the mindset going into that rematch?
That we need to win. We need to win. But either way, you know, we lost that game, but they were a better team.
Knowing you and knowing those home runs you hit in that game, to go down like that, when you contribute in such a big way to that game, you started that game pitching. What? Contributing in such a big way and then losing like that, how did that feel?
Well, it felt really bad knowing that we've gotten that far and then later on losing the same team twice, but you know, that's just how the game goes.
Yeah, so when you came home yesterday and seeing all your friends and family, what was that like?
It felt really amazing just seeing them all again.
Are you going back to school yet?
I'm going back tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay, so what's tomorrow going to be like, you think?
I think a lot of people are going to know us.
Have your friends, like, asked you for autographs? Like, what's your friends' reactions?
My friends' reactions are like, oh, you made it all the way to Williamsport. It's really cool.
Antonio, knowing you, you're going to keep trying for a championship, am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you going to keep playing baseball through college and high school and everything?
Yeah, I'm going to try making it to the majors.
Oh,
there you go. And you're going to remember this for the rest of your life, am I right?
Yeah, this is an experience you'll never forget.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, Antonio, and good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Hi, this is Liz Alper with East County Magazine. I'm here with West superstar Nate Nankill. Nate, first and foremost, how did it feel that Thursday night, that game, going into that game, how did that feel? Like, what was going through your mind?
It felt great because we got to play in Williamsport.
Yeah.
And all those people were there. I was so excited.
Yeah. When you lost, you fought so hard that entire game, and millions of people across the country were watching you. What was going through your mind then?
I was just really upset. I mean, obviously all of our teammates were upset, but it was just a really bad loss. Yeah. I think we should have won.
What was the advice that your coach always gave you going into a game? What did you keep in mind throughout any game that your coach told you?
Just to keep a good approach into a game.
What's next now? School? Going back to school? Are you excited?
Kind of.
What do your friends say? Are they, like, jealous of you?
I think they must be jealous because we went to one sport.
Yeah. Did you like the East Coast?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I like the West Coast better.
Yeah. Seeing your opponents,
when they get to you after games, you know, was it respectful?
Yeah, it was very respectful. We just kept good sportsmanship to the other teams.
That's good. I know it must have been disappointing losing and everything, but what was the feeling coming home yesterday and seeing all your family and friends?
I was just excited to come home and just see my family. It's just real nice. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Steve, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Liz Alper. I'm with Dante Smith here, the amazing pitcher for Sweetwater Valley Little League. Dante, I watched you on TV. Believe me, I'm 10 years older than you guys.
Yeah.
Watching you on TV, I was fangirling over you like a little girl. So, Dante, throughout the series, your pitching was on point, and it led you to a lot of victories, a lot of important victories. Because a pitcher is a pivotal position. How did it feel to be that leader in a lot of the victories?
Well, it feels amazing. I couldn't do this without my team. You know, it's a team effort. Thanks to the coaches and the fans for supporting us. It feels great, you know, just starting the first game when we start as the West. I'm looking forward to just having a good time right now with all our friends.
Dante, that Thursday night game, that heartbreaker of a game, I don't think you started that game.
No.
You did not start
that. It was Antonio, and they took him out after the first inning.
That's right.
And
so,
they put in Nathan. Yeah.
That's right. So, watching that game, that was a tough game. Tough team, tough game.
Yeah.
How did it feel to not be pitching and just watching that from the sidelines?
Well, you know, it was a good team, but we tried our best, and we lost, but we gave a good effort. You know, it was a tie game, 6-6, but we scored some runs, and they scored more than us at the end of the game, but, you know, we tried our best, and that's all that matters.
What was the mindset going into that game?
Well, the mindset was to wait on the curveball. You know, the first game, they started the same pitcher. We had trouble with the curveball, but they started the same pitcher the second game, and we try to make some adjustments, and some of us did. We just tried our best, and then some of us made some adjustments, and we got hits. Well, we got more hits than the first game, but
it wasn't just a double for the winning run. It was a home run, a two-run shot. What was that initial reaction after that loss?
Well, you know, we gave it our best. That kid, he should remember that for the rest of his life. It was a great hit, but we got to give it up to him. That was a really good hit. But it was heartbreaking, you know, our last Little League game, going down like that on a walk-off. But, yeah.
So, what's it like being back in San Diego with all your friends? Kind of take your mind off that heartbreaker.
Well, it feels amazing, you know, because we have so many fans that support us. Even in Pennsylvania, we feel the energy from San Diego. And even when we came from the airport, there was people cheering for us. But it feels great right now.
Yeah. And you've seen your other friends, your non-baseball friends. What are they saying to you?
Well, like, everybody wants pictures now, and they're like, oh, sign my shirt or sign my hat. But it feels good, you know.
Dante, are you going to answer me this? Are you going to keep trying to win the championship?
Yes, I will.
Are you going to keep playing baseball throughout high school and everything?
Yes, I'm going to.
Well, I'm sure you'll remember this for the rest of your life. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Dante.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, my very special guests are from Visionary Dance Theater. I have with me Mickey Monerath, the business director, and Spencer John Powell, the artistic director. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So, Spencer, let's start with you. You were a career dancer, I understand. Tell us what your vision was in starting Visionary Dance Theater.
Well, I sought out to start Visionary Dance Theater, which is a professional dance company, and its school, Visionary School of Performing Arts, to give opportunity to underprivileged youth the opportunity to study in a professional setting with professionals at a very low cost, and our scholarship-sponsored programs that we have through our education fund.
Marvelous. And I understand that you know firsthand how important it is for young people to get those kind of opportunities. Can you share a little bit of your own background?
Yes. I grew up in a very low-income family, a single mother who couldn't afford these things. When I was about 8 years old, wanting to be on stage and perform and dance and those kinds of things, the lessons were too much for Mom. So I was able to find sponsors or have people sponsor me through my youth as a child. From 8 to about 18 years old, I was able to participate in programs for free, which enabled me to go to college, being one of the first ones in my family to graduate high school and go to college. So it was a big deal for me, and I wanted to contribute and give back, and I realized that there were many youth out there that were very, very talented and just were lacking the training or the place to be where they could express their artistic selves. So it was very important to me to open up a performing arts institution where we could provide these services to our children and young adults who might be missed or overlooked, and have them expressing that kind of talent and getting that kind of training. So that's what we specialize in.
What a wonderful mission that you have there. And I understand your own career, you danced all over the place.
That's correct. I've traveled all over the country, being able to perform. Of course, I'm from Utah, and so my beginnings began there, of course. I performed with such institutions as Utah Musical Theater. I've performed with Penny Dunnelston, who is a former ballet dancer with New York City Ballet, another language performing arts company, Ogden Contemporary Dance Theater, just to name a few.
Magnificent. Mickey, you also do outreach to the schools, I understand. Can you share some details on that?
Yes, as part of our mission to share the performing arts with the community, we additionally do outreach with the public schools. So currently we are doing outreach with Point Loma High School. We have our professionals go into their performing arts department and participate, whether it's in choreography or providing direction. This provides a great opportunity for the kids to work with professional performing artists, and it can be very inspiring for them, especially if they're looking for a, you know, life on the stage or in the performing arts.
So I understand that right now you're located on the border of East San Diego and La Mesa, so you're serving both the East County as well as the San Diego communities. Can you tell us, Spencer, about some of the types of dance and theater experiences that your students are learning?
Yes. We have a comprehensive ballet program from the ages of 8 years old to 19 with the Visionary Youth Ballet, which is led by our education and outreach coordinator, Kiona Darlin. And we have, of course, the Visionary Dance Theater itself, which is a professional dance company of 6 members. And we have the Visionary Youth Theater, which mostly produces musicals, and that's from the ages of 18 to 19 as well. And we also have the Visionary Community Theater, which consists of semi-professional to professional adults. We also include parents of some of our children in the Visionary Community Theater unit as well. And of course, we have modern dance, tap, hip hop, vocal lessons, acting, scene study, you name it, we do it there. One of our next big goals is to form and start the Visionary Youth Orchestra.
Wow.
Which we have been talking about for the past year and a half, and hope to receive funding to get that going.
Let's talk about funding for a moment. Now, you mentioned that your specialty really is helping reach out and give opportunities to disadvantaged young people who are talented but might not otherwise have the opportunity to develop those wonderful talents as you yourself were able to do growing up. Where do you get your funding from?
Mostly from citizens of San Diego and San Diego County.
You're nonprofit.
We're nonprofit. Before productions, I write letters. I do whatever I need to do to solicit funds from individuals.
So it's largely individual philanthropists at this point?
Yes, at this point. We are now writing grants, trying to get funding through grant writing. But right now, we have an education fund set up where people can go in and donate. Some of our donors come in and they fund specific students and pay their tuition.
Oh, wow.
We also have sponsors who sponsor and pay for private lessons for our students. And people just come in and generously donate to our education fund, which has been a blessing. More than half of our students are on scholarship or sponsored. And the other percentage, which is probably about 40% of our student base, they're paid customers, but we have such a low fee that those parents, like I have to mention, the parents that are paying customers also double up and not only pay their children's tuition, but also help us out in making sure other children are covered as well.
It sounds like a tremendous program for the community. Mickey, I understand that there are some shows coming up. Can you tell us a little bit about what's on the agenda?
Sure. In September, on September 10th, we open up Hairspray, which is our visionary community theater, as well as our visionary youth theater that's over at the Performing Arts Center at Point Loma High School, who is one of our outreach partners.
And Spencer, for listeners who may not be familiar with Hairspray, can you tell us a little bit about the show?
Well, Hairspray takes place in 1962 in Baltimore, right during the racial tension of that time. It's a show that's about segregation and trying to integrate. 1962 was that era when, at that time when we were still kind of in the 50s, but
yeah, civil rights movement.
Yes, and change was in the air.
Yeah.
And so that was that turning point in 1962 where the youth were starting to stand up against the establishment of that time and trying to integrate things such as schools and Hairspray. That particular storyline, it's a television show, a dance television show reminiscent of, American Bandstand kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And so it's filled with a lot of dancing, a lot of humor, and some serious moments to really think about it. And we chose this particular show for the reasons that are happening today in the news,
I was just going to say, yeah, I think those issues are resonating once again today with all the headlines we're seeing about racial tensions and police violence and so forth around the nation.
Yeah.
I would imagine there would be a lot of interest, again, in the topics that, these sort of timeless topics that that show raises.
Yes. And there were just issues just several months ago in Baltimore, the same kind of issues like history repeating itself almost.
Yeah, so that's right. Mickey, what else do you have coming up?
So also coming up in on October 16th and 17th is Visionary Dance Theater's Fall Dance Concert titled Shades. Over in La Mesa at the Kauai Sun Studio.
Ah. Now, tell us about that show.
Well, we have two exciting guest artists. One is the internationally acclaimed choreographer Jean Travers, who came down just about a month ago to set her piece, One Drop, on the Professional Dance Company. And that piece is about the California water crisis, the drought that we're going through. So it's pretty relevant for today's time. It just got off of a run in China and will be making its California debut here with Visionary Dance Theater. We also have Natalia Berlardi, who will be doing a work of hers from her graduate school days called Garden Five. So we're excited about those two guest artists joining us. And, of course, the beautiful, wonderful, talented Visionary Dancers will be presenting those works.
That sounds like a delightful performance. How many years has Visionary Dance Theater been around?
We've been here for 6 years. Okay. August 1st is our 6th-year anniversary.
Very good. And I understand that you've grown so much, you're just bursting at the seams and looking to find a new location. Now, full disclosure, listeners, East County Magazine has talked with them about the possibility of some shared studio space as we're expanding also. But tell us about where you're hoping to go and what the vision for the new space would be.
We are just busting at the seams there at our current location. Our population has grown. It's just been crazy. So we are looking to move to Center Drive, right across from the Grossmont Center, which would provide us additional studio space, give us other people who would come in and join and share the space with us.
Well, very good. to be right here in the heart of East County.
Yes, and we would title the new space Visionary Movement and Business Center.
That sounds very exciting. Looking ahead, what is your vision, each of you, if you were to look ahead 5 years, 10 years, 20 years for Visionary Dance Theater, what do you hope to see happen?
Well, I would like to see, you know, now in our sixth year, we are seeing people grow. Our teenagers are becoming adults and becoming our teachers and working at the studio. I would like us, I mean, to see the mission grow and to see more children and young people come into our studios who are maybe hidden over there in the corners because they can't get into the other establishments and bring them forth and share their talent. Of course, growing more and bringing in other artists from around the country to share their expertise with our young people.
So bringing in some well-known, established artists, famous names perhaps?
Oh, yes, we would love to do that. That's, of course, on the forefront of our vision right now is to get people. Right now we're working on the gala and we're working on some big-name artists to come out. We're talking to some agents. And of course, everything is about the helping of our young people. So we ask people to come at very little price or for free or donate their time to give exposure to our young people. So
that sounds like an amazing cause. And it's just so nice to see someone doing something in the arts, especially given all the cutbacks we've seen in the public schools where arts, unfortunately, seems to be the first thing to go when there are budget cuts. So it's great that you're creating these opportunities for young people to get experience in the arts and to shine and to grow and to pursue actual careers in the arts. Mickey, where can people go to get more information about Visionary Dance Theater if they're interested in lessons for their children or getting involved or volunteering or perhaps being a donor or a philanthropist themselves to underwrite one of these talented young people?
Yes, you can visit our current studio at 7202 El Cajon Boulevard in San Diego, or you can just go online at www.visionarydancetheater.org. That's theater spelled with a R-E instead of an E-R.
Very good. I'm going to let you have the last word. What else would you like our what else would you like our listeners to know that I haven't already asked you about Visionary Dance Theater?
I think every time we are exposed to the public, they're quite surprised at the abundance of talent that we have at Visionary. These young people are just some of the most amazing individuals I've been able to work with. In their time at Visionary, we have seen some of our performers go to the Broadway stage.
Really?
Yes, and we have a young man now whose movie is opened on Tuesday.
Fantastic. What's the movie?
The movie Sinister. He's a little kid. He won't be able to watch the movie that he's in, but he will be in a new HBO series.
Wow.
That's premiering this fall. He's also in Hairspray, so you can catch him in Hairspray. So it's just a wonderful blessing to see our young people working in television, commercials, movies, and bigger and better theater programs, as well as dance programs all over the country. So that's been the neatest thing that I think people should know that's happening here in their community, and just to know that these young people really do shine, and I'm so proud of them. None of our students have a GPA of under 3.5. Most of them are 4 point or better.
So these are smart kids
and they're talented. I just don't know how they accomplish these things sometimes because they're at the studio pretty much 5 to 6 days a week in classes, rehearsals, and those kinds of things. But when they're not being worked on stage, they're in the corner doing their homework. I'm just very proud, and we're very lucky and blessed to have these young people around.
Those are such inspirational stories, and I really want to thank both of you for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, to share your success stories there at the Visionary Dance Theater.
Yes, thank you for having us out, Miriam.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Leon Thompson with the Conservation Report on East County Magazine. What do bald eagles and fairy shrimp have in common? They're both on a list of species to be protected under a $3 million grant that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is providing to San Diego County for habitat preservation. In addition, the city of Santee will receive close to $189,000 for its multiple species conservation program. The funds include $2 million to purchase up to 200 acres of riparian and upland habitat, as well as vernal pools, seasonal wetlands that are home to species such as the San Diego fairy shrimp, California gnatcatcher, Arroyo toad, least bells vireo, and southwestern willow flycatcher, and the bald eagle. Another $1 million is slated to buy land specifically to help species that thrive in vernal pools. Over $37 million was provided to 20 states, including $16 million in California. Dan Ash, director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, says partnering with state and local governments helps solve some of the greatest conservation challenges of our time. The funds are available through the Endangered Species Act, funded in part by the Land and Water Conservation Fund. For details, you can visit fws.gov.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
A series of events are planned in Descanso to honor the memory of famed saddle maker and documentary filmmaker on Vaqueros, Gary McClintock, including a memorial ride and a barbecue on September 20th, as well as a church service and reception on September 26th. And today, we thought it would be fitting to replay our Sounds of History interview with Gary McClintock, speaking about the history of the Vaqueros in our region.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history. Back in the saddle for our next conversation is Gary McClintock, founder of McClintock Saddleworks in Descanso. Gary is famous for his beautiful custom-made saddles with their gleaming leather and hand-tooled detailing. But he is equally famous for his knowledge of the world of Los Vaqueros, the cowboys of the Southwest and Mexico. Gary, welcome back.
Thanks, Helen. It's really great to be back with you. I enjoy being around you. You're such a lovely, vivacious person that it always is encouraging to me.
Oh, gee willikers. Now tell me, cowboys in general have such a hold on the American psyche. For you, what is it about the story of the vaquero that is so compelling?
You know, I think where that started for me was with Granville Martin, who I came to know. I wasn't that thrilled and overwhelmed with the cowboy as a rodeo cowboy. I was more interested in the guy that rode the backcountry and handled cattle and maybe had a little small ranch. You know, what we were presented during the 50s and all the cowboy shows that were on TV, that just sounded like a great way to live. You know, that was exciting. Not necessarily the rodeo cowboy, but the ranch cowboy. That's what got my attention. And when I met Granny, he introduced me to the whole world of the California vaquero, which was a whole different way of doing things than even the Texas cowboy.
Gary, for our listeners, Granville or Granny Martin is a historian?
Yeah, he was a great historian. He didn't plan to be that way, but he just got all wrapped up in everything. First, he was a rancher, a vaquero is what he called himself. They would go vaquero and not cowboy, and he would always refer to it that way because it was a little bit different way of handling cattle and being that type of a range cowboy is what he was.
It sounds like you're referring to the vaquero as a kind of steward of the land. That's a different
Absolutely.
Thing altogether.
Definitely a steward of the land. You know, if you look to what an environmentalist is today, they had to be that way. They had to make the land produce for them. If the land wasn't taken care of, it wouldn't produce. Of course, you had to have rain, which is what they all pray for, to make the grass grow. But they were very essential stewards of the land that preserve the land for us to what we really, it's been abused, so it's not as nice as it was in their day. I mean, there's a different philosophy that's out there with the different agencies of the government as far as how the backcountry should be handled. But in his day, it was the cattlemen that were foremost survivors. I mean, it was a ranching community, a ranching society that existed with 90% of the people living out on the land, where today it's reversed. You know, it's probably 99% of the people live.
So we're talking about cities. A whole ranching society in parts of California, Arizona, New Mexico, and spilling over the border.
Oh, yeah.
Into Mexico.
Yeah, Mexico's really where it all comes from. And that, you know, as they moved north, back in the 1700s, they settled California and they settled New Mexico. They settled Arizona. And that was the only thing there was to do, is raise cattle, and you needed horses. So they raised horses as well. That was like making automobiles in that day. You had to have good horses. So along with the cattle came the good horses.
So there's a big Spanish colonial backstory.
Absolutely.
To the world of the vaqueros.
Oh, that's
because,
who it is.
Like, where do horses come from?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good question. But they introduced as far back as when Cortez came. Cortez was the one that introduced horses in 1519. Yeah. He brought, I don't know, maybe 19 or 20 horses with him. They were in Hispaniola before that, down by Cuba, mm-hmm. and some were in Cuba. They were starting to raise them there. They were getting ready for a intrusion, an entrada into Mexico. It wasn't Mexico at the time. It became Nueva España to them.
Yes.
But it was just a big land mass out there that they wanted to explore.
And those horses then multiplied, or they ran away?
No, they were very well under control. The end of breeding program came along with that. That's
okay.
Those particular, there was a breeding program in the islands down by Hispaniola. That's why they had the horses there. They were breeding them there.
Oh,
and then as they brought them over and they had the opportunity, once the conquest was done, which didn't take much, they started breeding, and some went to South America, some went to North America. So different breeding programs went throughout all of Mexico.
So it's fair to say that we have historic horses, that the vaqueros you're talking about in a contemporary sense are actually riding and herding on horses with this long pedigree.
Well, it's so mixed at this time, it's really hard to... What you say is true if you look to the Mustang. That probably has more of the Andalusian, the Lusitanos, the horses that came with the conquest. Those were the horses that propagated, and they did run loose after a while, but that was later. You know, at first, they all had to run loose because they didn't have fences. You know, they had to eat, so they let them run loose, but that's when the Indians got all the horses. They stole them from the Spanish and started their own breeding program.
Ah,
you
yeah.
See, they really had no horses to speak of until... Really, Father Kino came into what they called Pimeria Alta, which is the northern part of Mexico and the southern part of Arizona and New Mexico.
And Father Kino is?
Kino's the one, a Jesuit priest that introduced all that. And he had very little protection, but had a lot of livestock, a lot of cattle. And he introduced it to the Indians. He wanted them to propagate them. He wanted them to get involved with ranching. And they did.
Father Kino was a Jesuit, so he predated Father Sarah, who
oh,
was
absolutely.
Franciscan.
Yeah,
yes. There was a kind of warfare between the two orders. If I'm recalling this correctly, Royal Spain removed the Jesuits.
Absolutely, that's exactly right.
They sent in the Franciscans.
Became very jealous of the Jesuits. Carlos III, the king over there in Spain, was thinking that the Jesuits were taking advantage of him and holding back from him taxes or gold or something. And in reality, they really were not. They had very little, and they were a very selfless people. They lived for the Indians that they were trying to convert.
Gary, you mentioned fencing, and there is that old song, "Don't Fence Me In,"
yeah.
and which is kind of the anthem,
yeah.
The national anthem for a cowboy or a vaquero.
Yeah.
And really, in point of fact, for a modern vaquero, how much fencing is there? Is there room to be a vaquero?
You know, Helen, that's a great observation, because it's literally gone. There's very few places where you have open range. I mean, there's some of that some places, but nothing like what was back during that era. I mean, the whole world moved on horseback. The horses were trained so well because there were so many of them to select from to begin with, after they perpetuated, especially in California. The great horse herds just multiplied. They dissolved the missions in 1835. So about that, before that point, maybe between 1820 and 1835 was when there was such a entourage of horses grazing throughout California and the Southwest. Well, from that, they could make a good horse because they had nothing but cattle and horses. And cattle, working cattle with a young horse gives them a reason to turn, to stop, to go, to back up, to do all the different things that we require of a well-trained horse. It just came from natural working. And they were better. One horse might be better than another because of natural selection. One was just a little bit better than the other one at doing this. And as a consequence, if they could perpetuate that, they would. But they didn't necessarily ride the mares.
In the folklore of the cowboy and the vaquero, is there anything similar to the rules of the road for cars and boats, where you have to give way? So say two vaqueros are meeting on a narrow trail on a mountain grade. Who gets to go first?
That's a pretty interesting question, actually. Probably not so much of a reality. Some situations would develop that way. There is some etiquette regarding the herdsman who are handling the stock, cattle, sheep, goats, whatever it is. There is kind of a rite of passage, like if you're working the right side of the herd, you don't cross in front of the guy that's working to the left of you. He shifts to the left and you go with him.
Okay.
More like a dance, you know, instead of crossing in front of each other.
Okay.
There is that.
Is that where do-si-do comes from?
I don't know. It could be.
Are you saying that it's the tradition of the vaquero is handed down in families?
Oh, absolutely. From generation to generation. In fact, we made a video about the cowboys in Baja, and it kind of goes into a little of that and how it was from father to son. The tradition was handed down. I mean, it was unfortunate for those who didn't have as much land. They couldn't get it handed to them like me. I wasn't in a family of that, so I kind of was left out of
that. I've seen that film, and it's 1 hour, and it's very good. How could our listeners order that, or can they order it?
Oh, sure, yeah. We have at my saddle shop there in Descanso, we always have copies available, and they can call us at the saddle shop. I mean, we're on the internet.
Yeah.
BookedTalkSaddles.com, we're there, and you can find our phone number, and everything's
right on the website, and
yeah.
Then you can order right there.
It's better to call and order. I'm not set up to order off our website because I want to make it more of a personal thing.
Gary, you are terrific. Thank you so much for stopping by. For the Sounds of History, I'm Helen Ofield.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.